Hey, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of the Variety and iHeart podcast, The Big Ticket. I'm your host, Mark Malkin. So I have to ask, are you a fan of Unorthodox? How about Beanie Feldstein? If so, I've got a pretty exciting show for you today. First up, Amit Rahav. Don't know his name? Well, the young Israeli plays Esty's husband, Yankee, in Netflix Unorthodox. Coming up, Rahav talks about playing a Hasidic Jew in Brooklyn, making history for playing the first teen character to come out as gay on an Israeli teen show, and what it's like to be out himself and becoming a role model for LGBTQ youth. Then later in the show, Beanie Feldstein. The Golden Globe nominee stars in the new coming-of-age dramedy, How to Build a Girl. So stick around, I'll be right back. Welcome back to The Big Ticket. Amit Rahav is just 24 years old. After racking up television credits in his native Israel, the actor is getting all sorts of Emmy buzz for his work as Yankee in Netflix hit miniseries Unorthodox. I caught up with Rahav from his home in Israel. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. How's Israel doing in this crazy upside down world right now?
Actually right now it's starting to get a bit easier.
Yeah.
So they're like opening some schools only for like first until third grade. So it's slightly going back to like normal life.
Yeah.
Thankfully. So I'm guessing it will take a few more weeks, but we'll get there. How is it at your side?
I'm in Los Angeles and it's still, you know, it's still pretty much shut down.
I saw you sighed.
Yeah.
It said everything.
It's just scary. You know, everyone's walking around with masks. It's Los Angeles and they're talking.
Same here.
They're talking about reopening some stuff soon, but people haven't been following. Yeah. And people haven't been following the rules here. You look at the beaches here and people are going to the beaches and yeah, it's wild.
It is wild. You know, in Israel, they're like the policemen are just like standing outside the beach and, you know, if you will go there, you'll just get a fine.
Wow. Yeah. They were doing that here up in Malibu. The cops were in the helicopters and if they saw people surfing, they told the cops in the street and then they went and they were giving them like $1,000 fines. So they were pretty
My God.
So what have
everything
you been,
is crazy.
Yeah. What have you been doing during quarantine?
I was just like, you know, binging some shows.
Yeah.
What'd you binge? And some like, so it's quite embarrassing because I haven't watched it, but I'm now like binging Broad City. I'm ashamed that I'm watching it just now. I feel ashamed. I should stay in quarantine as a punishment for not watching it until now. But I'm just watching it now and I am in love with everything there. It's so good.
I'm not one to watch a show like on repeat. There are certain shows I will. In Broad City, we will watch
is the one.
And you will laugh as much as you laugh the first time.
It's so hard to make you laugh like at your home in front of a screen. And they're doing it so easily.
Yeah.
It's like effortless and I'm bursting out laughing all by myself, which is just, it's like, this is it. This is the show this is my quarantine show.
I know. And it's so sad when it ended. It was just like, wait, you have to keep going. And I mean, they ended
just forever.
Yeah. Yeah. Which brings me to your series. Only four episodes.
Only four episodes.
Oh. Did you want to do more?
I know. Yes. You know, we had such a good time there.
Right.
We would love to do more.
So tell me, how did you get involved? Tell me about the audition.
Yeah. So the audition was kind of secretive. You know, we got an audition for the orchestra. This was the name of the project.
Oh, wow.
We knew it's a European show. No one told us anything about Netflix. I just knew that it is for like a Hasidic guy from the Satmar community. And I just got two scenes, the first date scene and one of the one of the bedroom scenes.
Which one?
The bedroom scenes. Uh-huh. Where, yeah. And it was so interesting, really. It was very, very, I was very curious to know what's going on. But then I got to know that I'm doing the audition with Shira, and Shira and I are friends. Wow. We've been friends for the like 10 years. We grew up like one next to each other. And it was so exciting because we were waiting for this like opportunity to act with each other.
Wow.
And, you know, the night before we were speaking on the phone, and we for the first time did the Yiddish scene, the scene in Yiddish, because we both never spoke Yiddish before and never did a scene in Yiddish. So I was like in my bedroom speaking with her on the phone, and we were like doing the first date scene, and it did feel like a first date, and it did feel very like charming. It was magical, this conversation, and we felt, oh, this could work. We were like crossing fingers for each other. I wish we would get it. I wish we would do it together. And then we just, it happened, and we were so happy, really.
So you knew each other for 10 years, you've been friends, and then you had to do those bedroom scenes.
Yeah.
How did you both sort of get comfortable? Yeah. I mean, they're not the most sensual, as we know. But how
they
did you
are
do that?
Intimate.
Yeah, they're intimate, yeah. For sure.
Yeah. How did we do it? We just jumped into it.
Yeah.
Like literally jumped into it. I must say that like on the first take, we didn't rehearse it. We never you know, physically rehearsed it. Mm. So on the first take, Shira and I were laughing a bit, but we were hiding behind my talit, like the fabric that I'm wearing in my pajamas. So there was like a curtain between us and the camera, so we could giggle a bit in the first take. Only the first take, I promise. And then once we finished the first take, we were like, no, focus, it's important. We were focusing, and we got into the zone, and we were very we were very determined to do this scene and to give it the respect it deserved. So it was easier after the first take.
So how quickly did you have to learn Yiddish?
Quite quickly. We had maybe like a month or two.
Whoa.
And it's like learning any other language, Japanese. I don't know. It was very, very difficult and very challenging. But thankfully we had Eli Rosen, who is our Yiddish dialect coach. And he were there, like he was there 24/7. Helping us and recording himself, and we were listening to all these recordings, and we wrote it in I wrote it in English, I wrote it in Hebrew, I wrote the definition, I wrote it like so in so many ways. I've got so many notebooks of the scenes, and it was really quite an experience to, you know, to act in a different language is something very unique.
Mm. So tell me about the first time you saw yourself as Yankee with the peyos and everything. That must have been wild.
Yeah, it was wild. it was wild because I'm very secular. Mm-hmm. And it is quite the opposite. Like Yankee is quite the opposite of my daily life and style, I must say. So the first time it felt, it was crazy, you know, suddenly those peyos, and they looked so good. Our makeup artist, Jens, he seemed so realistic, and he caught my hair direction, like growing direction. He like did it perfectly. So once I put on the clothes and the peyos, I suddenly, like, it felt right. Mm-hmm. In some way, and I got to know the character much better.
Well, I was really surprised when I saw your Instagram that they weren't real, because that's literally all my questions is, were they real, and did you ever think of growing them out? Or no?
No, for us secular people, maybe it will be now stylish after the show has aired. Maybe it will become like a fashionable trend. And then I will maybe consider growing them. But beforehand, I've never had any payoffs.
But did you think about growing them out for the show?
You know, it takes time to grow them to be so shiny and to look so like spot on.
Right.
And I didn't have the right, like the amount of time I wish I had to grow them.
Did you ever go off set and sort of go into the world as Yankee?
Oh yeah. When we were filming, in the street, so I was walking in the streets of Berlin with my costume, and there were I saw some Israeli families, or you know, the time when we were filming in the airport. There's a scene in the airport, so people were looking at us very like it was suspicious, and they were curious to see like those people, and they didn't know we were filming because we were just sitting, just Jeff and I, or Shira and I, like in the side and on the side, and people were like looking at us. And I felt probably what the Hasidic guys and community are feeling when they are like mingling inside, right, the, like outside their areas.
Did you read Feldman's book? Were you familiar with it?
Of course. I read it like very quickly because it's so good. And it was very important for me to know like her point of view and where she comes from. And she describes there into details the daily lives there in her community. And it was very important for me for my research to get to know as much as I can about their lives there.
So let's talk about some other stuff you've done. You've done some American acting. I don't know how you say it, but you've come to America to do some acting. What was your experience like coming to the States and working here?
You know, it was really, really nice. I loved it. I really loved it. It was such a change from Berlin, because in Berlin we filmed in the interior scenes, and you know, the inside were all sets that were built for the show, or like already like apartments or houses that exist. And then suddenly we were filming on the street, and we filmed in Brooklyn and in Williamsburg, like out like in the Satmar like neighborhood and like on their streets. So it was it was an interesting experience, because I was walking there and they obviously recognized that I am not a part of their community. I didn't manage to sneak in. And my Strymel, that the fairy hat, they're vegan, so they're not real. So they can tell that it is not a real hat. So I was like walking there with this fake hat, and anyone could tell that I am not part of the community. So people were looking at us filming, and they were, I guess it was interesting for them also to see like someone who is dressed up similar to how they look. It was very interesting, and it was very, I'm happy that I had this experience to feel like to walk in those actual streets and see the actual shops and people and the real community living there.
Did you, as you said, you're very secular. Did you explore religion more though? Did it sort of make you more curious?
Yeah, definitely. I've been like watching all the videos you can find on YouTube. Mm-hmm. I watch them. I've been watching them. Like, I stayed up until very, very late at night, and just was, I was watching so many videos about like Sathmer weddings and all the rituals and ceremonies. And I was reading a lot. And I had Jeff Wilbush, who plays Moshe in the show. He's an ex-Sathmer guy, and he helped me on set, and he was there, and I asked him so many questions, really too much. I can't even start to describe how many questions I've asked him, but he was so kind, and he shared with me so much of his experience, and it really helped me to get into the character and to learn more about the religious life, the Jewish religious life.
So what does it feel like when you hear people talk about Emmys, and you could be getting nominated for an Emmy, and people are looking at you for these awards? What does that feel like?
Yeah, something like that. Only this question is out of this world, and I'm very overwhelmed and grateful from the situation. And just to be in the talks of it is more than I could ever dream of. And I'm just very grateful for this situation only. So I don't allow myself to even go there imagination.
I wanted to ask you about Flashback. So how major was it on Israeli TV for you to be playing a teen who comes out of the closet?
It was quite major, because it didn't happen beforehand in Israel. So suddenly there was a kid who comes out as gay on TV for the first time, and he's very he's good. He's like okay with himself, and I feel like it was. I was like gifted with this role. It was such an honor to portray this role, because I feel like it opened a gate to more characters from the LGBTQ community, or even from any community to be seen on screen, and for people to feel that they are seen on TV, like for people to see characters that they can relate to. Mm-hmm. So I'm very grateful for this role.
What does it feel like to be a role model for LGBTQ kids? Are you getting, I'm sure you're getting fan mail, emails, direct messages thanking you. And, and I will say this, and I will say this probably, forever, that anybody who either, could play a character coming out, someone who is openly gay in Hollywood, it saves lives. You're saving kids' lives.
Yeah. I'm just like, I feel that, when the show was, on, I got so many messages, and these like from kids and teenagers in Israel, and it was the greatest thing like you could ask for, because people were really sharing with me their secrets and like their lives and how complicated it is and how the show is giving them air to breathe, which was very I got very emotional from each message. And the creators have done something which is historically, like an historical event on Israeli TV. It feels again, very overwhelming to be in this position, but still I appreciate this, this honor I got to lead this character.
And I saw an interview where you said coming out to your family, completely supportive, no big deal. Did you ever think growing up that you'd be able to be out and then also playing a character who's gay on television?
No, actually, I didn't think so. But then when I got the character, so there were no question for me, in terms of like, it's a thing, like you said, it's something which is more than just like an acting gig or another role in my career. It's important for someone to be there and out there and to speak for those kids. And so there was no question with this role.
Awesome. Amit, thank you so much. This is wonderful.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
It's congratulations. So nice to meet you. And hopefully I'll see you at the Emmys if there are any.
Who knows?
Who knows? Awesome.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Take care.
You too. Bye. Bye-bye.
That was Amit Rahab. Unorthodox is available on Netflix. Now I'm going to take a short break, but when we return, I chat with Beanie Feldstein. Welcome back to The Big Ticket. Beanie Feldstein was nominated for a Golden Globe for her work in last year's Booksmart. Now she can be seen in IFC Films' How to Build a Girl. Based on Caitlin Moran's semi-autobiographical novel of the same name, the film stars Feldstein as a teenager from a working-class family outside of London who becomes an unlikely celebrated rock critic. I chatted with Feldstein from her family home in Los Angeles. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
How are you coping in quarantine?
I'm fine. If you hear a light bulldog snore, it's because my dog Jackie is right down here. She's hard to move because she's like 90 pounds, so I just let her be.
I have. Our two dogs are in the other room. My husband's here. So I'm like, listen, I have Beanie at 4. Make sure they're not barking.
My parents, I was like, you have to be quiet, please.
How are you coping other than doing the Saturday Seder, which was amazing?
Oh, that was so special. You know, I didn't get to see any of the other portions when I recorded mine. And I was so moved by it. I loved it so much. I sat right here with my mom and we just like laughed and we cried. And I was so honored to be included in it. And I thought it was such well-made, beautiful, just this evening that was really beautifully curated, and I was so excited.
Yeah, I was more moved by it than I thought I would be.
Me too. You know? I cried multiple times.
So what are you doing during quarantine?
You know, staying inside very diligently. I just want the world to heal, and I am happy to wait inside very, you know, as I said, diligently, as long as that needs to happen. Donating to every cause that I care about and everyone that's on the front line. We've been doing some trivia in my friend group. So two people have to come up with a quiz, and then we all take it and we have to show up in costume. And then the losing team has to donate to the charity of the game master's choice, which has been really fun. It's a really, it's a great way to, I don't know, it's like nice to see all your friends and to have like an activity and have it be fun. And then it's always like whatever we're losing, we're like, but then we get to give to charity. It's great. It's all it's a good losing method too. You're like, but I want to give the money. So I want to lose. But working out and trying to walk carefully, staying 6 feet apart. And the dog is so nice. It's so nice having like this sweet little angel. She's so sweet. And we've been watching Ozark.
What do you think?
Good. So we had never watched it, and now we're, of course, on season 3. We haven't finished season 3 yet, though. So
I won't say anything, but it is dark. That show is dark.
Oh, it's so good. Oh, my God. It's so much darker than anything I usually watch, and but the acting and the writing, and it's just the directing is so brilliant that I'm loving it.
So what should we talk about first? How to Build a Girl. Tell me, it's a great movie. You do an English accent very well. tell me... First of all, tell us about the title, How to Build a Girl.
Yeah, so How to Build a Girl is based off of Caitlin Moran's brilliant novel by the same name. She also wrote a memoir called How to Be a Woman. So I think that's sort of her her more motif of the first of her books has been that. This is the novel, not the memoir. So it is loosely based on her life, although the character of Johanna Morgan, my character, is not directly Caitlin, and owes a lot to Caitlin's, she owes a lot to Caitlin's experiences, to say the least, but she's not named Catelyn, and it's not this, you know, true to the exact specifics of her life. So it was really wonderful for me because I had all the gifts of it being loosely a true story, that I have this incredible, vivacious, brilliant woman who wrote it and then adapted it and lived it. But I also don't have to feel the pressure to be doing like a direct impersonation of her or representing her specifically in her mannerisms or anything like that. So it was kind of this beautiful combination of like, I can create this character from scratch, but I also have the best source material in the world, both in her and the novel itself.
So you play Joanna. Tell us all about her.
So Joanna Morgan is a 16-year-old girl growing up in Wolverhampton, England in 1993. And Wolverhampton, if you don't know where it is it's in the West Midlands of England. So it's north and then west of London. And as an American, I really did not know much about what that meant. There are so many different cultures and experiences and accents within that very small, very small country. I always joke that it's like, I mean, it's smaller than some states. It's smaller than many states in the US, but there is so much packed in there. And Wolverhampton is in the Midlands, as I said, which has its own customs, its own vocabulary, and most importantly, its own accent, specifically Wolverhampton does. And so I went on this journey to sort of learn about Wolverhampton itself, and then obviously also try to capture the specificities of their accent, which I think when you're listening to it as someone who has never been there or heard it, you're like, what is that? when I first got to Wolverhampton, it was so fun for me because I studied sociology in school, and I felt like I almost got to do an ethnography like during my research process for this movie, because I moved to Wolverhampton. I worked in a shop and I spoke in the accent the whole time I was working in the shop. And so I sort of felt like I was like undercover, and I enjoyed it so much. The people there are so magnificent, and the women I worked with in this shop were so giving to me and also really hard on me. They were like, nope, that was wrong. Try again with the accent, which I was so appreciative of. And I loved the experience because I felt like I've never done so much like research and prep, both, you know, at my desk reading about it, but also getting to go and live it, live that kind of preparatory experience, which was really fun for me and a brand new experience for me too.
Whose idea was it for you to go work in the shop?
It was our director, Cokie's, and I was really nervous. I'm really not what you would call maybe like a method actor. I always joke I'm like a snack and a chat between takes kind of actor. Like I'm really not, I'm not at all kind of someone that stays in it. But as I said, I mean, even Londoners struggle to do the accent. It is such a specific regional accent. Even infamously, a woman walked into the shop and I asked her if she was from Wolverhampton, and she scoffed at me and she was like, no, I'm from Dudley. And I was like, where is Dudley, to the girls? And they were like laughing because it's 9 minutes away from Wolverhampton, but she could not believe that I thought she had a Wolverhampton accent. But obviously to my novice ear, I couldn't distinguish yet between the two. But there are differences in even 10 to 12 minutes away in England. And so I really, I got to kind of delve deep into what this very specific small city had to offer, and what it gave Catelyn in her upbringing. It is a very kind of remote place, and it was a very big industrial town, but then the industry kind of left the area. So it reminded me a bit of like, certain industrial cities in the Midwest, like mm-hmm. Cincinnati or something like that, if you were to compare it to America. But it was such a special experience I got to pull my own pint in a pub. I drove on the other side of the road. I mean, I really kind of, I had a very full experience there, and it was the most method I'll ever be.
So Johanna she's a high school student who becomes a rock critic.
Yeah, so she, at the beginning of the film, she really embarrasses her family, and they're living in a council estate, which means they have, like, money from the government, but she plunges them even deeper into poverty with one of her actions, which I won't give away, but it is quite funny. And a brilliant cameo from Chris O'Dowd, who we were so thrilled to have. But he's just the best, and we had the best day together. He was so wonderful to me. But she embarrasses herself, and she needs to find a way to make money, basically, and her brother. And they have a really beautiful relationship in the film. He's brilliantly played by my friend Laurie Kynaston, who's a brilliant actor from Wales. And Chrissy, her brother, is like, look at this, and hands her the newspaper, and is like, this music magazine in London is looking for young writers, and she's an exceptional writer. She's, Johanna's a really optimistic, bright, she's a big brain. She's a big brain and a big body and a very small town. And I think that is kind of the beginning of the film, is her trying to figure out who she is in that small town. And then she gets this opportunity and she goes to London and becomes a rock critic and reinvents herself as Dolly Wilde, who is her pen name, and dyes her hair and you know, starts wearing short shorts and top hats. And we're kind of off to the races from there, but it really is the truest kind of coming of age story. And what I love so much about the film, and what I really connected to when I read it for the first time, was I think Catelyn, in her writing and then in the film now, she really gives people of all ages, all genders, all sexualities, et cetera, permission to make mistakes and try again and not feel like their mistakes have to define them, but they just kind of fold into the tapestry of who they are. And I just was so moved by that. And I think everyone can be reminded of that. And I think How to Build a Girl really kind of shows you that journey. And then at the end gives you that really beautiful permission to say, this doesn't have to define you. It's a part of who you are, but we can try things on and then let them go in different moments of our life, different phases of our life. And we should do that. That's the joy of being alive. And that's what I love so much about the movie.
Well, I love the fact that, like you said, like she's this, you know, she has a big brain and she's optimistic and she has this vision of what her life could be or should be. And she gets it. She gets some of it as Dolly, thank you, Dolly Wilde. But then she messes up. She messes up in a big way. We won't give it away, but it shows.
She's quite literally tripping over herself the whole movie. I mean, yeah. I fell times playing Johanna, I'm very clumsy, but the way that she kind of manifested in my body was like I was dropping things and tripping over myself, and she just, as you said, like both in action and for me physically, it was just a very, she's clumsy, she doesn't always get it right, it's not A to B to C to D like perfectly figured out. And what I also love about the film is that once she becomes this rock critic, she's in a boy's world. It's the 90s, it's London, it's the music scene at that point was really male dominated, and she is this young, wide-eyed kind of deer in this male world. And so the film also kind of explores what it's like to be the only woman, a young woman at that, in a very male dominated industry. And she's one of her coworkers, who she fancies very much, who she has a crush on, is like, you're being too sweet. Like we're critics. And so it also kind of explores what it means to be a critic in a really thoughtful way, I think. And they say, you know, she says, okay, if I want to get ahead, I've got to get a hate. And I love that line. I mean, that's Catelyn's brilliance, that like it's at its peak. But so that's why kind of this, but then it becomes intoxicating, this bitchy, I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say that, sorry, this like intoxicating kind of critical world of boys and opinions and being mean and tearing people down. It's hard at 16 for that not to be intoxicating. It's hard at any age for that not to be intoxicating. And so she lets it take her over a little bit. And I love the journey she goes on. And I love that Catelyn and Cokie, our director, that we kind of were not afraid to show, as you said, kind of the highs and lows of who this young woman is. And that is the joy of it, is getting to watch her go through those ups and downs. And she's also not like, her parents are kind of not able to be there for her. And her brother is her brother, but he's not her, you know, he can only do so much for her. I've been saying that I was so lucky in the beginning of my working life to get to do both Lady Bird and Booksmart, which are such beautiful, like epic tales of friendship. And I feel like How to Build a Girl is a story of someone who wasn't lucky enough to find that. And it's sort of the story of what happens when you're that age and you don't have a best friend to kind of keep you in check or keep you in line and for you to go to when you're having those moments and kind of get advice and bounce ideas off of. And I think that's also a really important story to tell because not everyone finds their tribe so young. And I was really lucky too. My experience is much more in line with Lady Bird and Booksmart. And, but it was really, it was a very new experience for me to kind of explore what those moments feel like by yourself. And then seeing what happens from there.
I can't help but think of Almost Famous.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a great reference for the film. And it, before I moved to England to film, I was on the phone with Koki, our director, about like once a week doing preparatory work for it. And Almost Famous, I think, was the very first reference for it. But also, I mean, the references sort of ran the gamut, which I loved. Like she had me watch A Little Miss Sunshine because like tonally that's a really close kind of spirit, like, you know, cousin to our film. It's just like it's so funny, and it's like this especially the familial parts of when they're at home in the Morgan house. It has that sort of energy to it with the intense dark comedy, but also like not being afraid of those darker moments. And then like 24 Hour Party People and Almost Famous and these other kind of more directly related films that I loved watching and rewatching, or, you know, some of them I had already seen, but Almost Famous definitely. And it's funny because it's Catelyn's real story. So it's like, it's, you know, everyone's, you know, some people are like, it sounds like Almost Famous. I'm like, it's Catelyn's life. you know, it's she lived it. She lived Almost Famous a little bit, but it is a beautiful reference point to the film. And we welcome that comparison for sure.
And maybe she'll just start a trend. People will be wearing top hats again.
I know. Oh my God, the top hat. They very sweetly, like the production, our creative team gave me a very fancy top hat as my wrap gift. And I love it. I'm like, do I bring this back? It's kind of amazing. Yeah, the visual journey of the film was so fun. Like she starts out, you know, brown hair down to her waist. And as I said, like our costume designer was so brilliant that we actually all wore the same shoes and jeans and clothes because they don't have enough money for them to all get new clothes. And Sarah Soleimani, who plays my mom, and I both wore the same bras. Like the attention to detail was amazing. but like hand me down. But and then all of a sudden she dyes her hair red and she gets a, you know, some fishnets and we're off to the races on an eyeliner. And it was really fun. It was like nothing I had ever done before in that capacity for sure.
Well, Beanie, thank you always. I love talking to you.
I love talking to you too. I was so thrilled. I was like, what a joy. I get to see Mark from inside my house.
Well, you take care. Stay safe.
You too. Stay healthy.
And hopefully we'll see each other in person sooner than later.
That was Beanie Feldstein. How to Build a Girl is available on VOD. Thanks for listening to this week's Big Ticket. I'll be back next week with Nicholas Hoult. We'll be talking about his new Hulu series, The Great, about Catherine the Great, co-starring Elle Fanning, training for the new Mission Impossible movie, plus find out what Hoult thinks about the possibility of the X-Men joining the MCU. It's all coming up next week on The Big Ticket. Until then, make sure to follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Mark Malkin and get the latest Hollywood news at Variety.com. Stay well, stay safe, and I'll see you next time.